जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्रय गौर भक्तवृंद जय अद्वैत चंद्रय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद
something which text is on the board number 70 or something yeah okay so we're starting with Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila chapter 20 the Lord instructs Sanatan Goswami with text 262 and eventually we'll wind up at 270 which is on the board एतो हि विश्वस्य च विज्ञानि रमा मुकुन्द पुरुषप्रदानम् आन्वीयभूते शिविलक्षणस्य ज्ञानस्य च सतैव पुराणम् Translation Balaram and Krishna are the original, efficient and material causes of the material world. As Mahavishnu, and the material energy, they enter into the material elements and create the diversities by multi-energies. Thus, they are the cause of all causes. Purport. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:46-31. So Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatan Goswami systematically in the process of devotional service, and systematically is explaining the nature of Krishna and how Krishna is expanding himself, parashya shakti vividaiva shruyate, how he is expanding himself in unlimited forms and energies, and how at each stage of the manifestation of the material energy, everything is intimately connected with Krishna. In this way, to see Krishna behind everything is not an artificial process, but rather Krishna is directly connected in his various expansions and energies to any aspect of life. Therefore, in one sense, we are only seeing Krishna and nothing but Krishna. Everything is Krishna. But still, Krishna directly in his original personal feature is the all-attractive feature of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur translates the name Krishna in an interesting way. He says, the love-attracting feature of the Lord, Krishna. So instead of saying Krishna meaning the all-attractive, he translates Krishna as the love-attracting personality. So that is very interesting, because truly Krishna attracts the love of all living beings. So then we'll carry on. Srishti hetu ye murti prapancha avatare se ishvara murti avatare namadare. The form of the Lord that descends into the material world to create is called an avatar or incarnation. Maya tita paravyone sabare avastane vishve avatari dare avataraname. All the expansions of Lord Krishna are actually residents of the spiritual world, but when they descend into the material world, they are called incarnations. avatars. Sei Maya Avalokite Shri Shankarsana Purusha Rupaya Vatine Haile Pratana. To glance over that material energy and empower her, Lord Sankarsan first incarnates as Lord Mahavishnu. We find these expansions described in various scriptures. The Brahma Samhita describes that in the center, in the spiritual world, is an hexagonal form which resembles just like a diamond. And this is Golok, the abode where the Eternal Supreme Lord resides. Then surrounding that transcendental realm is a quadrangular form with four sides. These four sides are the abodes of Vasudev, Sankarsan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, who are, it says, then immediately from that spring, the four human natural resources, which are Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and then the four Vedas are also found there at these four sides, which are facilitating Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So this is the four human requirements, it is said. This statement of the Brahma Samhita, I like it because it speaks about the human requirements as being religious activity for bringing auspiciousness in this life, Dharma, Artha, economic development, Kama, sense enjoyment, and Moksha, liberation as human goals, human needs, human requirements. Then, of course, the spiritual platform goes beyond all human requirements because the spiritual platform deals directly with the soul. So I thought it's interesting. The soul then is beyond Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha and not at all requiring any of these things. Therefore, Bhagavatam rejects any trace of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, because these are not the requirements of the soul. So the four Vedas are preoccupying themselves with these human requirements, so it is said. And then beyond, we find the Agamas and some confidential Upanishads and the Puranas that are dealing with pure devotional service. So when the Supreme Lord expands himself, he is ready to provide for these human requirements. I was on a long flight from Australia to Europe, and I was reading everything about Vritasura on the way, and it was it is very interesting because Vritasura somehow or other had been invoked in a sacrifice by a brahmana who wanted to create an enemy of Indra, but he made and he wanted to create an enemy of Indra that would kill Indra, but he pronounced one syllable wrong, and therefore it became an enemy of Indra that would be killed by Indra. So that sets the scene. And here is Vritasura, who actually turns out to be not a demon at all, right? But who turns out to be completely transcendental, who has no interest in the body. Since he appeared in the body of a demon, and he appeared with that particular, a yagya was performed so that he would be the enemy of Indra. He was pushed forward by all the daityas as the leader in a great battle. So he was not fighting alone with Indra. There were armies on both sides. It was an enormous battle, and somehow or other, Vritasura was pushed forward by all the daityas to fight, and so he had to fight. All right, he was ready to fight with Indra. But in between, he's preaching to Indra, and he is explaining to Indra that, first of all, he deserves punishment because Indra had killed a brahmana, Vishwarup. So how can he act like this? First of all, Vritasura is calling him to task. Next, Vritasura is ready to give up his body. He is ready to be slain, and he fights fearlessly. And he fights completely according to duty. At one point, when Indra drops the thunderbolt the weapon he has to kill Vritasura, then Vritasura waits and allows him to pick it up. So in this way he's following all the principles of Dharma, and gradually in the story it comes out that Vritasura is a greater devotee than Indra, although both are devotees. And that's the interesting part. It's actually two devotees who are somehow or other here in combat with each other. And Vritasura is the greatest devotee. But although Indra is not the greatest devotee, because Indra, unlike Vritasura, is attached to his bodily existence. Vritasura is so detached, he doesn't care at all. He has no interest to protect his life. If he is meant to die, so be it. It is the will of the Lord. And he just cares about the Supreme Lord, and he's thinking about the Supreme Lord, and he's thinking about going back to Godhead. Indra is thinking about worshipping the Lord, but at the same time having a comfortable existence in this material world. So Indra is interested in Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, or religious principles pertaining to the body, economic development, and sense gratification. And liberation also. So in this way, Indra is within that human requirement realm. But the interesting part, and why I'm bringing up the story, is that Vritasura is explaining to Indra, he doesn't need to be in anxiety. Because although Vritasura's weapons are terrible, terrible, powerful, horrible trident, he points out that, A, you have your thunderbolt weapon, and that can destroy my weapon easily. But if that would fail, then still you have nothing to fear, because you have a natural armor which is supplied to you by Lord Narayan. And that armor cannot be pierced by any weapon of any doom. So there is absolutely no fear required on your part. You are completely protected by the armor of Lord Narayan. So how interesting that Lord Narayan is personally providing protection through some armor to Indra, although he's a mixed devotee. Although he has material interests, but because of his great piety, he plays a part in the Lord's creation. So we're seeing that Krishna is not only dealing with the pure and unalloyed devotees, but in his expansions, Krishna is also providing for the mixed devotees, the devotees who are still having a material agenda. But Krishna protects piety. Krishna protects the order of the universe. He protects Indra because Indra stands for piety. Whereas Vritasura, who was of the community of the demons, was representing a community of godlessness. Therefore, Indra had to win. Indra had to win that battle, because ultimately, as the Lord expands himself in his various expansions and various energies, he has a plan. It is an intricate design that is there to provide for all the living beings who want independent enjoyment from the Supreme Lord, who want independent control from the Supreme Lord, and at the same time, there is a mechanism to bring all these living beings back. So on the one hand, Indra is provided by the Supreme Lord. His world of enjoyment is kept intact. Yes, you want material things? Yes, you can have because you are pious. And I'll protect that. But at the same time, from a pure spiritual point of view, from the point of view of Vritasura, what was the benefit of that? What was the benefit of that? Simply temporary enjoyment. Why bother with that? Vritasura, no interest, zero. Simply interested in going back to Godhead and whatever would come in the material world. Happiness or distress, let it come in its own accord. But I will not in any way deviate from the pure spiritual path to obtain either happiness or distress in this material world. The pure devotee is not insensitive. The pure devotee certainly experiences suffering in this material world as unpleasant, but he's not going to make any deviation from the path of pure devotional service to avoid it. Yes, he may avoid suffering, but if that avoiding would involve giving up devotional service, no. Simply stay to devotional service, tolerate the suffering. In the same way, a pure devotee will accept enjoyment that comes on its own accord, but will not go out of his way from devotional principles to score some enjoyment. And I mean, say like, okay, I'm very religious and always following everything, but now, you know, you have this opportunity. If you just buy this ticket from the lottery, I'm sure you will win, and just buy it, and you know, then that's okay. No lottery, because it's against my devotional principles. No matter what. Like that, the pure devotee will never deviate from the path of pure devotional service. But Krishna is willing to provide for the living beings conditions of life according to their desires and states of consciousness. And Krishna deals with these material desires by sometimes fulfilling them and sometimes frustrating them in a systematic way. So when Krishna sees that the living entity turns away from him, he gives the living entity some rope, some freedom to enact those desires. Yes, be independent. Yes, pursue it. Yes, try some material enjoyment if you so desire. But then after a while, Krishna puts some sand in the sweet rice, or put suffering in the material world, and which leads to frustration and brings the living being to his senses. So in this way, Krishna expands himself for that purpose, for giving the living being some space to satisfy their material desires. And in each of these stages, Krishna expands himself and is involved with the living being. We see that Vasudev, Sankarsan, Pajuna, Aniruddha, we're seeing that that these personalities, deities of the Lord, are also becoming involved in material affairs, in supervising the material energies, and in supervising the functions of the mind and the functions of the intelligence. So in this way, in his expansions, Krishna is dealing with the material energy. And every living being, this morning, as the sun was shining on the castle, the swallows were dancing in the sky in jubilation. Right, hundreds of them were enjoying the early morning sun. And I was just thinking, just as in the early morning, a brahmana sits down to greet the sun, chanting his Gayatri mantra, the bird is sitting above him on a branch of a tree also never failing to greet the sun in the same way by singing, maybe not by the Gayatri mantra, but singing the glories of the sun. The bird may not be aware that he's dealing with Surya Narayan as the Brahmana is. The Brahmana may understand on a deeper level that it is the Supreme Lord that is providing that energy. But yet, the birds are so joyous, enjoying that energy of the sun. It is, there may be a sense, covert religious sense in the birds, right? Although it is covered, certainly, but the inherent religious nature of the living being is there, and it shows in all living beings to some extent. But in the human form of life, this religious tendency can fully develop. Generally speaking, in the animals, it is not there. One exception, of course, is Gajendra, who somehow or other, as an elephant, remembered the Supreme Lord. But there are opportunities even for animals to engage in devotional service. And we see that animals also can become devotees. There are elephants in temple, elephants who carry the deities and who are very devoted. And there are stories of some of these elephants who stormed into the temple at the end of their life, just broke the doors, went into the temple and gave up their bodies in front of the deity. Such stories are recorded. They became devotees. In Vrindavan, there is no doubt that the animals are devotees. I have seen myself when they were serving prasadam in the temple and they're carrying buckets with prasadam. I saw birds doing a kamikaze dive for the buckets with prasadam, and somehow or other coming straight from the sky and grabbing that prasadam. I have never seen in animals such eagerness for prasadam as in Vrindavan. They are not ordinary. Also, we had in Vrindavan, over the courtyard of the temple, we had a net to keep out monkeys and pigeons. But then there was the tamal tree, and the tamal tree, Prabhupada's tamal tree, and in the courtyard, and growing, and it started to break through the net, and it broke some branches of the net. So one monkey was aware of it. And at the time of prasadam, we were serving prasadam in the temple, devotees sitting nicely in rows and being served on leaf plates. And just as it was getting towards the end, and most devotees had left, suddenly this monkey came down. And this monkey just sat down on the rows, nicely on the mat, in front of an empty plate of prasadam. In front of an empty plate. So what do? You know, I said, well, serve that monkey. We served the monkey. Monkey nicely ate, and then left. Yeah. Who says that the animals in Vrindavan are not devotees? Must be covered by ignorance. So this the attraction to Krishna is inherently there in every living being. It is covered in our material existence, and therefore that inherent love for Krishna, the love attracting personality, that inherent love will be drawn to Krishna. Love is there in all living beings. Naturally, we see that all living beings take care of their offspring with affection. And so affection is there, and affection is naturally drawn to the Supreme Lord. So in this way, the affectionate Lord is not only attracting affection of all the living being, but he is also turning in affection to all the living beings. Therefore, when we're looking at all these expansions of the of the Lord appearing in the material world, we can understand that what is behind it, the driving force behind it, is the Lord's affection for the living being, His love for the living being. It is said that Krishna is Suridam Sarvadehinam. He is the well-wisher of all living beings. That's the reason why Krishna expands himself. Otherwise, he has no business to expand himself in all these Purusha avatars and so on, because these avatars are dealing with the material energy, with the material world. And basically, the material world is coming into being not by the desire of the Supreme Lord, but by the desire of the living being. One Western philosopher, a rationalist named Jung, asked the basic question and says, like, how can this world be designed by God when there are basic flaws in it? It's like there are so many imperfections in the world, so how can it then be designed by the all-perfect God? He says, no, the flaws are perfect, Mr. Hume. The flaws are perfectly designed to make the living being suffer. Said his basic idea is that the world is created for us to enjoy. So, you know, if God was such a good creator, how could he create some flaws in a world, you know? We're not enjoying it at all. No, you're not meant to enjoy it, actually. You thought you were meant to enjoy it, but the faults are designed perfectly to create frustration in all of us. So, that's it. So, the point is that the design of the material world is perfectly arranged by Krishna, but it's not according to his desire. It's according to the desire of the living being. The spiritual world is the realm which is according to the desire of Krishna. That is the place which is according to desire of the Supreme Lord. This world is not according to the desire of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we cannot hold the Lord responsible for all the suffering in this world. He didn't want it. He didn't want that. He didn't want this world in the first place. We wanted it. We needed it. We needed space. We wanted more space. We wanted a space where we could express ourselves, all our unlimited abilities and talents and so on, very nicely. Yes, we wanted to explore our personalities and our abilities, and in endless ways enjoy. That's what we wanted. And the Lord said, all right, you want that? Okay, well, I will arrange something. You know what? I'll create a world then which is a reflection of my unlimited spiritual energy. My unlimited spiritual energy, which is made for unlimited enjoyment, I'll create a reflection of that. So in that way, there's unlimited varieties in it. You can try to enjoy that. Great, great. We'll have it. Let's go. Yes. But then, to bring the bewildered living entity back to what he really desires, the spiritual world, yes, some suffering is required. Otherwise, the living being would continue to waste his time in the material realm. So, some suffering is an impetus to make us question, why are we existing here independent of the Lord? One might say, but that's not fair. Then he doesn't give us the real choice by putting suffering into the material realm. We didn't ask for that. So why did he put that in? So it's like, well, that's his mercy. But we don't want that mercy. Yeah? Can't he leave that mercy out? Well, there is a realm where he's left that mercy out also. If you don't want that mercy of some suffering to push us back towards the spiritual, then there is a realm where we can reside without any suffering, in the Brahmajyoti. There we can be separated from the Lord. There we do not have to serve Him, and at the same time, no suffering. Isn't it beautiful? Not really, because ultimately there is the natural suffering, not the created suffering that the Lord has placed into this material world, but the suffering of being separated from the Supreme Lord, that is also there in the Brahmajyoti. But it may take a long time before the souls residing in that abode finally realize that. That without becoming attached to the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, one can never find peace of mind. One cannot stay in such a place. And again, one must fall down, patantya nadrita, until one has found his shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. So even from the Brahmajyoti, eventually, one will fall and then back to this abode. So there is no rest, no rest for the wicked, so it is said, right? Sorry to say. There is no rest for the wicked, and will endlessly roam about, right? Bahu sakahi anantascha, many-branched attempts for enjoyment, not vyavasyatmika buddhir, not one-pointed attention on the lotus feet of the Lord, no rest for the wicked, restlessly, chanchalam himana Krishna, restlessly the conditioned soul will wander eternally, nitya bada, on and on, looking for different places to be happy, and still not satisfied. Still hungry. That is the nature of material existence. Never fulfilled. Therefore never in peace. Never being able to stay anywhere. Endlessly wandering and wandering. Life after life. So this is the material condition. Until finally we find shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. So here, Lord Chaitanya is explaining to Sanatana Goswami how the Supreme Lord is expanding himself in various ways, and that in these various expansions, he deals with the material energy. So Krishna stays closely involved with the living being. He has no obligation to do so. Krishna is completely independent. He has no requirement at all to come down to the material realm. He's not obliged. But Krishna, still he does so. Still he is an avatar, one who descends. Therefore we can see, before I came to this Krishna consciousness, I was thinking like, but why, you know, why are these people from India speaking about avatars, right? There are so many of these avatars, there's always an avatar in India, an avatar on every street corner. Why so many avatars, right? What's the need of this, and why would the Lord do so? Why would he descend again and again? But now, as we are discussing, we can see how the Lord is bound in love. He's bound in a deep loving relationship with every living being. And therefore, like a loving parent, he is telling his dearmost children, yes, of course, I'll give you freedom. The kids have reached the stage of puberty. They have come to the point of rebelliousness. And they say, I want my freedom. You know, and I want to, it's my life, and I'll decide what I want, and I want to do what I want. And Krishna says, of course. Of course. Yes, yes. I mean, I'll give you that freedom. But of course, like a caring, loving parent, yes, gives the and the kid thinks, I'm old and wise enough to know what I'm doing, right? I'm 16 years old, I know what I'm doing, right? And, you know, and thinks, and when you're 16, you think you're an adult, right? I remember distinctly that I had those thoughts. In fact, when I was 15, I thought, now I'm an adult. I was very convinced that I was, but maybe. But now I look at even if someone of 20, I'm sorry to say, but at this age, I look at someone of 20 like a kid, you know. Don't take offense, it just means I'm getting old. but whatever. But I'm looking at someone of that age like a kid, as someone who thinks, he knows what he's doing. But meanwhile, I think he doesn't know what he's doing. So Krishna, in the same way, says to the living being, yes, 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 all right, have your freedom. But meanwhile, Krishna all along is there, invisibly so, but he is there, he's present, he's behind everything, all the arrangements. Krishna's behind it again. You know, and here you are in my independent world. Now I'm independent from God. Yes, you are. Meanwhile, you are totally independent. Yes, yes, yes. And meanwhile, right behind the Supreme Lord is all alone there. So, in reading about these expansions of the Supreme Lord, we can deeply see the deeply loving nature of the Supreme Lord, who throughout cares for every living being. And that is how Krishna is the love-attracting personality. Because when we see that he goes so much out of his way for every living being, then we can see the noble nature of his character. And suddenly we're looking at a very lovable Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, all right. Any questions or comments? Yes, O Tatvavit Prabhu. There are a few of such statements, yes, that he incarnates in all the species of life. Well, we see that there is a sublimated state of animal life also in Vrindavan. We see it, right? And Prabhupada is describing it. Not only were my examples there, but Prabhupada is saying in Vrindavan the animals are non-envious. Right? He mentions that in the scriptures, in his purports. So, even in Vrindavan, even the animals are naturally devoted. So, yes, I guess we have no further descriptions, right? I have the same references that you have. I have not read anything more, but that the Lord also descends into all these animal forms. I think he's certainly also bestowing mercy upon the animals, yeah, because ultimately he cares about those souls as well. But we have many other statements that the human form of life is a requirement for that is janmadiyasya yataha. Yeah, Vedanta Sutra says that. Therefore, now let us inquire into the absolute truth. And the word therefore refers, the acharyas say, means atato brahmi yigyasa ata. It refers to therefore Now that we have this human form of life, now inquire into the absolute truth. So mercy is available, and it appears that the Lord is bestowing mercy upon the animals in the form of avatars and in many other ways, through prasadam or through being engaged in indirect service, or indirectly in service, I should say. But it's the human form of life that is particularly the form of life which is designed for devotional service. It's interesting because we think it's particularly the human form of life that is designed for sense gratification. We think that animals, they have to struggle for survival. They don't really get so much scope for enjoyment. But the human form of life is particularly the position for sense enjoyment. That is the one form, right? It's not a fact, right? The human form of life is designed for devotional service to the Supreme Lord. But as our opportunity increases, also our confrontation with Maya increases. Whereas the animals, they are suffering the reactions of previous karma. The animals are not making new karma. The animals are not held responsible for their actions. Therefore, the animals, they go upward. And an animal cannot go down by his destiny. He cannot bring himself down by his actions, because he's not held responsible. There's no karma that he creates. He can go down due to previous actions. Yeah, it may still be that he goes in one species, that he still goes down to another species due to previous karma. That can be, but he will not by his destiny bring himself down. But human beings can, by their own destiny, bring themselves down. So the responsibility increases, but also the opportunity. This human form of life is the special opportunity for going back to Godhead. So that remains our focus, even in the light of all these other of avatars in other species. But that there is mercy, that's obviously, because wherever the Lord is, his mercy is there. And it is Suridam Sarvadeinam. And then we have little stories like the story how Prem Sarovar came into being. And that story is basically describing how the divine couple, Radha and Krishna, were meeting in Vrindavan at the site of Govardhan. And at that time, a big bumblebee came. And that big bumblebee started to buzz around the divine couple. Radharani, with her veil, tried to sort of send him away. It didn't work. So Madhu Mangal personally took action, and with a stick he went in full attack mode, and the bumblebee finally retreated, and Madhu Mangal chased him into the forest. And when he got back, then he said, "I got rid of that Madhu." And Madhu means bee, but it also means Krishna. So when Radharani heard, "I got rid of that Madhu," she thought that he got rid of Krishna. She started crying. And due to the tears in her eyes, she couldn't see Krishna. When Krishna saw this, that she was so touched, and that just by hearing Madhu, I chased away Madhu, that she started crying. Then Krishna also started crying, and the water from those tears created Prem Sarovar. And we can take bath there. That's not bad. Now, back to the bumblebee. The bumblebee, meanwhile, was a devotee and was the king of the bees. And he had actually circumambulated Radha and Krishna, particularly around the face, to get a close-up darshan. And then when Madhu Mangal chased him away, that bumblebee went back to all the bees. And all the bees were in ecstasy to hear from that bumblebee what he had seen, and he described in detail. And yes, why not? All the bees are devotees of Krishna, and why wouldn't they be devotees of Krishna? After all, Krishna has a blackish body like they do, and he wears a yellow dhoti like they do. And he's into music as well, just as they are. Therefore, they are convinced that Krishna is the bee god. So, in this way, we can see the relationship with the animals. Yes.
Who will become an animal?
Smart question. Smart. Well, number one is how reliable is this hypnotic regression stuff? It's not that our acharyas were necessarily buying into that, as this is true. That's question number one. Question number two is, well, suppose it would be true, right? Suppose someone would remember how he was a meat eater in the last life and didn't become an animal and now is again in a human birth. Well, then we should think that this human birth is just a step in between. He still has an animal birth waiting for him. Yeah. Sometimes, you see, karma is an interesting cocktail. You may remember that the story of King Riga in the Krishna book, King Riga, who was such a pious king, and but somehow or other by accident gave the same cow twice to the brahmanas, and okay, for that he got a reaction. Da, 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 da. At the end of his life, he was asked, "What do you want first, the reaction to your pious or to your impious activities?" Then he chose his impious, and he became a lizard first. If he would have first gotten the reactions to his pious activities, because there were many, he would have first gotten many wonderful births, and then at the end he would have been a lizard, if he would have chosen the other way around. So that's also possible, that there's still an animal birth waiting behind. Maybe a few animal births, because, you know, in each human birth again, eating meat, so it piles up the animal births. So, like that. First, maybe the result of pious activities came, which held up the result of the impious activities. Yeah. Yes.
You said that suffering helps us to remember Krishna, bring us back to Krishna. My question is, how do we preach to someone who has all facilities for enjoyment? He's thinking about my brother-in-law, he's a wonderful wife, a wonderful job. His own house, he lives in the Netherlands, and he's like, what's the problem? How do you preach to someone that has all the facilities?
Yeah, but you know, what if the dikes break? You know what I mean? It's artificial. We're living behind the dikes. Yeah. I'm also from the Netherlands. It's artificial. You know, in the city hall in Amsterdam, there's a glass tube, and it shows the tide, right? And, you know, the last time I extended my passport there, it was 2 meters below sea level, the city hall. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. So, like a child lost in play and not having any greater vision, like a child just bouncing around the ball, having no concept that actually there is a road with nasty cars nearby that tend to squash little children, right? Like a child just running around and playing with the ball. The adult can see, the child cannot see. So, like that, your brother cannot see. So, in this way, maybe we can expand the vision a little bit. Make him see, yes, it's all sweet, it's all there, But, you know, the economy is going down of the Netherlands. It's going down, right? Consistently now over a number of years, recession is a reality. So, you know, so it's not all just a beautiful blue sky and no clouds, right? There are clouds. There is rain. So a few Dutch examples can maybe bring it home, you know. Clouds and rain, dikes and all these things. That should register. Kids playing with balls and nasty traffic. Yeah. Hopefully. But the living being is independent, and it's not necessarily so that people can be convinced with arguments immediately. In that case, become 007, James Bond, and somehow or other, you know, in the form of Dutch apple pie with cream, bring some prasadam. Like that. Yeah, what to do?
Isn't it possible that when the question of brother in law has just had a previous life, that he was very devoted?
He was very exalted.
Devoted,
yeah.
But not entirely ready for going back to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that Krishna gave him a life to have a lot of good things come there.
Enjoyment.
Yeah.
You know, I think the principle is there. I think it's not that good though in Holland. You know what I'm saying? So it's okay, but let me finish. Well, it's not that good either. Let me just explain though. It is good karma. It means to take a birth in the so-called first world countries, the wealthy countries of the world, where life is sheltered and everything is well taken care of materially, is the result of pious activities. So certainly that our relatives or whatever the residents of those countries are enjoying the fruits of previous pious activities, that you have rightly said so. But not very pious, because if you're very pious, you get heavenly planets at least, and that's a lot better than the Netherlands, believe me. No, I'm not finished. If his brother-in-law would have been a pious devotee in the last life, who now enjoys, something must be there because he has such a family member. So because he has a family member who is a devotee, we do suspect that there was at least a previous connection with devotional service. Otherwise, you don't have a family member who is a devotee. Therefore, but right now, if that person is not open to devotional service, then by engaging him unknowingly in some service, it will reawaken that devotional service that is there from the past. That's where the apple pie and the cream came in.
I would trust that the brother-in-law eventually will come back to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, we can do that, but that takes a long time. So we want to speed it up. The merciful devotee, no, we don't, because we suffer. The worms are eating your insides right now. You feel the pains here and there. The worms are eating your liver. The worms are eating your heart. Yeah, they eat your heart out while you're sitting there. There are even worms living in our brain. I've read about this. And, you know, so it's not that we are enjoying. We are just accepting the suffering that we are in these bodies as normal. You know, it's just normal. It's normal that I'm sweating right now. It's just normal because it's warm. So it's normal that I'm sweating. It's normal that I have a headache left over from all the travels that I did for the last years. It's normal that I have some pain in between my shoulder blades because I'm 60 years old. Right? It's normal. It's normal that I have an ingrown toenail. It's completely normal. It's not, of course I do. I mean, I feel my toe, you know, as I'm talking to you, I was just mentioning the toe because the sock is pressuring on my toenail. I'm tolerating it. I'm tolerating it. But I suffer, and so do you. If you carefully investigate our existence, we're all suffering. No, but that is about awareness. From the philosophical point of view, we're always suffering, and sometimes we are aware of it, and sometimes not. You know what I'm saying? It's like we're suffering, but sometimes we're not aware of it. Now, I agree with you. We're not going to do. I'm experiencing the suffering. I'm not going to dwell on it. My toe, my sock, my toe, my sock, my toe, my sock, my sock, my toe, my toe, my sock, my toe. That's not, I'm dwelling on Krishna, I'm dwelling on the soul, I'm dwelling on the relationship that we have with the soul. But we are not in denial of the fact that the bodily existence is offering us suffering. It is. And therefore, we want to get out of here. And therefore, if we can speed up the progress of a brother-in-law through some apple pie, we're ready for action anytime. Okay, I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.